Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome to Administrative Static. This is John Vecchione, and our first topic today is the ever-popular vaccine mandates, where they come from, what the statutory support is for them, and what's happening. And last week, we discussed the Fifth Circuit had imposed a stay on the OSHA mandate. That is the one where the Occupation Safety Health Administration has issued orders to all employers with over 100 employees that they have to be vaccinated or they have to fire them or the company will have fines. And the Fifth Circuit said, well, no, OSHA doesn't really have that power. And I talked about that last week. And then all the cases, they'd been filed everywhere, all the cases got put on a wheel and they got sent to the Sixth Circuit. In the Sixth Circuit, some of our friends over at Buckeye and Consovoy, Buckeye Institute in Ohio and the Consovoy firm here in D.C. moved to have the whole case looked at en banc when all the cases from all over the country went to the Sixth Circuit. And Sixth Circuit said no. There were a couple of dissents, and I think the dissents were prescient. But what happened was a panel then took it, a panel of three people. And that panel then... The government immediately moved to new court, new rules. I did not think they'd change it, but Gibbons, Stranch, and Larson, that was the panel, an opinion by Stranch. He said, well, look, I mean, he kind of dissed the Fifth Circuit. He said, occupation, health, and safety has health in its title. So that means they have this power. And he said it wasn't a major questions issue. And those of you who listen to us frequently, the major questions doctrine is that when an agency claims huge powers that has never claimed before, what we have is the fact that the government takes a look at it, and the courts take a look at it, and what they say is that. If they're claiming this vast new power, we want to see where in the statute it says that. It has to be pretty clear. And so they said this wasn't a major question. The majority in this panel thinks it's not a major question, even though millions upon millions of people are going to be fired unless they get vaccinated, and companies are going to have all kinds of liability and all the rest of it. And so this Stranch says it's not a major question, and OSHA is in the health business. So the fact that this pandemic has nothing to do with any conditions in any of these workplaces, and the fact that everything the Fifth Circuit said, that it was over-inclusive and under-inclusive and all that, he poo-poos all this, Stranch does. But then there's a concurring opinion by Gibbons, which is what I will call an old conservative view, meaning that one of the reactions to the Supreme Court of the 60s and the 70s and all of the progressive rulings was that courts should not butt in to the elected branches. And Gibbons has just a one-pager that says, I concur. I agree the government's motion to dissolve the stay should be granted and concur fully in Judge Stranch's opinion. I write separately to note the limited role of the judiciary in this dispute about pandemic policies. Basically, he says, judges, OSHA knows its stuff. We don't. Let it do what it wants. And he says, beyond constitutional limitations, the work of an agency, often scientific and technical in nature, is outside our expertise. Kaiser v. Wilkie. Now, obviously, I don't believe this OSHA has any expertise in pandemics. It has nobody there who's infectious disease or any of this stuff. It's doing it for political reasons. It's a lot of nonsense, as I this view. But we have gone now into what we call active judging, which is you look carefully at a statute when government makes claims to staunch liberty, let's put it that way. So the dissent was by Joan Larson, who basically said, wait a second, this is a major
question. Who was on Trump's shortlist for the Supreme Court, by the way.
That is true. And who I know as well. And she said the Fifth Circuit was right, basically. And so there was obviously some disagreement on this panel. And I think there was some disagreement on the Sixth Circuit overall. But not only this OSHA rule, and I'll skip because we have limited time here, but I kind of want to give you a preview of where I think this is going. The federal health workers, the Medicare and Medicaid is also, the federal government is using those programs to say that anyone who takes those funds has to have all their health workers vaccinated or fire them as well. So you've got this, that has been stayed across the country. And some courts said no, and some courts said yes. And right now, the 11th Circuit, which is, Florida and places down that direction, has
Georgia and Alabama, I believe,
has not lifted the stay. And so that stayed, and all of it. So then everything, all of these issues, both the federal healthcare mandate, healthcare worker mandate, and the OSHA mandate are going to the Supreme Court. And Supreme Court has been sort of criticized about not having full opinions in this emergency docket area. So what they're doing is they ordered expedited briefing on all this stuff to go to them by December 30th from the government. The government has to respond to everybody by December 30th, and then they're going to have oral argument in this.
Merry Christmas, DOJ.
Exactly, to January 7th. So January 7th, they will have an epiphany about whether or not
a day late,
whether or not these mandates are lawful. You see what I did there. In any event, I think that what you're going to see, and I really think that
will there be a feast of different opinions coming out of the
court? Exactly. I think the Supreme Court. I'll put this marker down. Some people think that they're doing this, and that the majority will let the agencies sort of go ahead with this so as not to upset the apple cart with the administration. I think that the majority of the Supreme Court will agree with Joan Larson on this. I think that the major questions doctrine, regardless of what they think of mandates, I think that the major questions doctrine is too near and dear to the hearts of people like Kavanaugh that and they think it's a main doctrine that prevents government overreach, that I don't think they can let it go on these cases. So is it a major question? Yes. Where is the authority for this? Unless they consider that, and this puts aside all the fact that the rule makes little sense in whole industries. But nonetheless, we will see what happens. I think that the Fifth and Circuit and Larson have the better of this argument. And I think that the Supreme Court's going to agree with them. And I think that both of these mandates will be struck down. And, they're all vaccinated up at the Supreme Court. They believe in vaccines and they're not obstreperous about that. The real question here, though, is where does the government get its power, and has the administrative state overstepped its bounds in seeking to do good? And I think, Mark, that that's what's going to happen. I think that they are not going to let this one slide. I hear scuttlebutt around town that people are worried that they are sort of going to give this one up for other reasons. But I don't think that's true. I don't think they can. I think that they have to really look at this now. What they could
I think the OSHA one's the easiest one. So, yeah. If they let this one slide, then I think I would have fear for all of the other ones. But I think if they want to do something that, even if they want to split the baby, as it were, I would think this would be on the striking down side of splitting the baby.
Yeah, I think. And also because, the CDC cases, the Alabama realtor case, it's hard to get away from that when you look at the OSHA statute.
Absolutely.
And I will say against the at least the
and maybe Kavanaugh will be once bitten, twice shy on that.
Yeah, because he, as Mark points out, he let the government go the first time the CDC mandate came up to him, and then he saw that no good deed goes unpunished. So he may be wary of a good deed for the government again. So I am of the view that the Supreme Court took this pretty darn quick. There's going to be oral argument. There's going to be published opinions. Nobody can say this is the shadow docket. It will be in full light. It will be illuminated fully for everybody to see, and we'll see what they do. But I think that that Larson dissent immediately, the first thing it cited was Alabama Association of Realtors v. Department of Health and Human Services. And I can't imagine that that case doesn't really push a lot of the justices who were on that case to say no to the OSHA ruling. And I think it may be a bridge too far to do this to employees if you take Medicare or Medicaid, but that's a closer question.
John, can you give just a little bit more on why you think it is that the Alabama Realtors decision is so crucial to the outcome here?
Because the type of words that they pointed to in that case, that the fact that they could quarantine and that they could fumigate, I think it's very similar to this particulate matter in the workplace stuff that OSHA has. I think it's very analogous. The two statutes, the type of authority that the government is claiming are coming from words that I don't think they mean what they think they mean, as Inigo Montoya would say. And so since I think they're structured kind of similarly, even though I will admit, the name of OSHA is better than the name of, it is closer to health than the CDC is to evictions.
So it's not inconceivable that the Supreme Court will go the wrong way.
Not inconceivable. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Administrative Static on this Christmas episode of the podcast. John Vecchione and I are recording this ahead of Christmas, but we are certainly glad to have you with us and glad to have you listening in. One of the things that we wanted to talk about in this episode is some fairly disturbing evidence that's come to light this month that the federal government was conniving to suppress a free speech about the pandemic this past year and in 2020 as well. And in particular, what's come to light are some new emails from October of 2020 in response to the Great Barrington Declaration. And for those who haven't been following this closely, Great Barrington is a city in Massachusetts where several scientists got together to and issued a letter in October of 2020 that was called the Great Barrington Declaration. And the signatories to that letter included a number of very highly regarded doctors, epidemiologists, including Harvard University. He was then at Harvard University, Dr. Martin Kulldorff, University of Oxford epidemiologist Dr. Sunetra Gupta, Nobel Prize laureate Dr. Michael Levitt, and Stanford Medical School epidemiologist Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. And there were others, but these were some of the leaders of the effort. And what the Great Barrington Declaration talked about was the need to focus protection on vulnerable groups. So those who are most vulnerable to COVID should have extra attention paid to them, but maybe we don't need to lock down everyone. Maybe that sort of broad-based kind of public policy approach was counterproductive and unnecessary, and that focusing protection on vulnerable groups was the better way to go. Well, needless to say, Vec, that sort of message from very highly talented and well-regarded doctors and epidemiologists challenging the sainted Anthony Fauci, self-sainted, I suppose, or media-sainted, perhaps, Anthony Fauci, who had been leading the effort on pushing lockdowns in the federal government, it didn't sit too well. And there was an email sent from Dr. Francis Collins, the outgoing head of the National Institute of Health, to Dr. Fauci, raising concerns about the Great Barrington Declaration and saying that maybe the government needed to do something about that. He said, quote, this proposal from the three, and he calls them fringe epidemiologists, but that's the first time I've heard a triumvirate from Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford called fringe. So you can already see the sort of propagandistic effort going.
And Mark, when he says this, Colin says this proposal from the three fringe epidemiologists seems to be getting a lot of attention. Even a co-signature from Nobel Prize winner Mike Leavitt at Stanford, which kind of gives the game away on the fringe aspect of it.
Yeah, that's right. And he says there needs to be a quick and devastating published takedown of its premises. I don't see anything like that online yet. Is it underway? So there's several disturbing things in this. First of all, that Collins, the head of NIH, would suggest that there needs to be a published takedown of a scientific statement that's been put out there by other scientists. That's disturbing. The fact that he's sending this email to Anthony Fauci as though Fauci might be in charge of any such effort, that's disturbing. And the fact that these two ostensible leaders in public health for the federal government would see it as the federal government's responsibility to take down this debate that was challenging the federal government's view on how to handle lockdowns, that's disturbing. And Fauci doesn't reply to Collins. You know, if Fauci replied to Collins, what are you talking about? That's not how we handle science in this country. We should allow all of these voices out there and the truth will emerge and that will help to direct government policy in the right direction. But that's not what Anthony Fauci said, John, is it?
No, the thing is, he got articles together like from The Nation and Wired and things like this, not medical journals. This is the fight here is over whether or not you quarantine and protect the vulnerable or whether you shut down the whole society. And instead of showing studies why, for the first time, you would shut down the entire society, he quoted articles not from, you know, Scientific American or Lancet or anything, but basically popular news articles that sided with him on opinions rather than any scientific information at all. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, these are just op-eds, as you say, from Wired and other places, and they're political op-eds that have the sort of anti-Great Barrington Declaration talking points, but they weren't rooted in any scientific basis. There was nothing that was said to take down the premises of the Great Barrington Declaration on a scientific basis. The fact that this was the reaction, and by the way, there are others who were implicated in these emails, including Deborah Birx, who was another person on Trump's coronavirus task force. And do you know, Vec? I'm not sure if she's still in the mix at the White House or if she stepped down in the new administration.
Gone.
But she's she doesn't come out of this smelling very good either. And the idea here that's troubling to me is that these are ostensibly men of science, men and women of science, who are not paying attention to the science and who are really getting their hackles up when someone else puts forward different views of science. And their reaction to this isn't, well, let's engage in a scientific debate. Their reaction to this is shut it all down. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear this. And you know, the other sort of kind of famous example of this that we had from earlier in the pandemic was back in the very early days, February, March of 2020. There was early evidence that the virus had leaked out of a lab in Wuhan. And Fauci is implicated in emails from back at that time, conspiring with other people to shut that shut down that quote unquote to combat the spread of rumors and misinformation. And this was from World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, and I probably butchered that pronunciation. But he emailed Fauci and Jeremy Farrar at the British Pharmaceutical Trust and told them that this sort of natural origin theory was something that needed to be pushed as opposed to the lab theory. And I don't know, John, if you've been following the back and forth on these emails better than I have, but it sure looks to me like the federal government was complicit in efforts to shut down the truth. And if it hadn't been for other people in the federal government, and I'm gonna sing the praises of my former boss, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo here. He was one of the voices out there saying, sure looks to us like the intel is pointing to the lab and not to the natural origin theory. But had it been left up to the Anthony Faucis of the federal government, that all would have been suppressed. And in fact, it was suppressed. And there are other emails have come forward between Mark Zuckerberg and Anthony Fauci, where the Facebook made the decision at some point along the line not to take things down that it could show were objectively false, but to take things down that were inconsistent with the federal government's narrative of what was happening, both with regard to Wuhan and with regard to some of these medical positions on lockdown or on some of the other treatments that were controversial from the government's standpoint. And I think maybe that's the biggest problem of all, that you have outfits like Facebook acting at the behest of the government or conspiring in some sense with the government, not to take things down that they show are objectively false, but things that are not consistent with the government's narrative.
And the other thing that goes on here is the reputation destroying aspect of the federal government doing this. Now they've called these people friends. Now, and it is my view that the declaration basically is what our whole view of pandemics and virus was before this one. I think the statements in there are pretty standard epidemiology. Who gets to decide who the fringe is? Now, they're certainly not the ones who are running the show. Anthony Fauci and Birx and all that ran the show. And what did we have? We had old people in nursing homes dying in huge numbers. Now we have no testing. Why is there a testing crisis? Well, Fauci and everyone else was in charge of that. And where are the tests? Why aren't they easily available 2 years after the pandemic started? You know, these people are not geniuses. They're not all knowing. And yet they never admit error. And they call anyone who disagrees with them, even with scientific basis in front of them, the enemy of the people, basically. It's absolutely appalling. It really is.
Well, and I don't know whether this evidence of government suppression of free speech is going to make any more of a difference than the evidence, which has been out for a while, about the suppression of speech around the origin of the virus. Can you think of anyone whose head has rolled, John, because they helped suppress the truth that the virus came out of a lab in Wuhan? We're pretty darn sure that's the truth now.
Well, but I all think
these
so. But
people who
but they don't want to find that out. They don't want to, because it will always be cloaked in some mystery. I mean, you're not going to have, unless some Chinese guy, defects and comes over here and says, I have the tapes, how it leaked and everything. We're never going to know for sure. But,
by
a preponderance of evidence, we're pretty sure. And I would say by clear and convincing. Now, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. Who knows? But I'm telling you, that's the way it looks. And it's evidently not in the interest of the government to say so.
Well, I think Anthony Fauci has shown with these emails and others that he is not to be trusted, and he needs to step down. He's a disaster for public health in this country, and he needs to step down.